I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Walking Dead, Season 8 mid-season finale special. What does this mean? There are lots of spoilers in this. If you've never watched The Walking Dead, or if you're not as far as the middle of Season 8, forget it. Joining me as usual, compadre Jamie and acquaintance Matthew. Jamie's but 30 miles away, Matthew's 200 miles away in London. Jamie, hello.
Hey!
Oh my god. What you don't know is this is the third attempt at starting this podcast due to Jamie's awful internet. Matthew, hello.
Hello.
Oh, clear as a bell. Clear as a bell. And here you can hear the postcode lottery in action of Britain's Wi-Fi speeds. What can we say?
Wow.
I mean, just...
What can we say? What just happened?
I mean, maybe I'll start going through my notes as I wrote them. It's, you know, initial scene, Carl chatting to Rick. Sarah turns to me and says, is Carl going to die? Why flashback?
Wow.
Why flashback? If not, remove everything Rick cares about. And then the bin dippers appear and Sarah says, hope these people get massacred, though. So, unfortunately...
Why isn't Sarah on the podcast? She's clearly the most prudent of us all.
She's good at one-liners, but she's, you know, really not very smart. Is Carl going to die? She thought it. Did anybody... I don't think any of us called it last week, did we?
No. I really thought there was a minute there where I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be right. I'm going to go on the show and Michonne's going to be dead and I'm going to be like the most victorious person in the universe. There was that moment where she was like hacking that guy.
Yeah.
And I thought, she's going to go. Well, and then they completely blew us out of the water with Carl.
And I have to say, I have complete, well, I have mixed feelings, but mostly I just don't think it's the right move. I think Scott Gimble has lost his mind. This doesn't happen in the comics. He's essentially, you know, for the fans, essentially he has killed a child. No, it doesn't. What's he doing?
Well, no, Carl isn't a child. And I think they demonstrated that quite well in this episode.
But I mean...
You know what's annoying, though, actually, is I thought, I can't remember the actor's name, but I thought he really came into his own this episode. That little speech he delivered from on the ramparts to Negan, I thought that was really good.
Yes, and it's one of those things that when you go back and watch again, you'll see it means even more because you know that he knows that he's been bitten.
Does he at that point? Do you reckon? Yes, I thought it happened in the melee after that.
No, it happened. Remember at the end, he says, I saved that guy, his new friend. He says, I saved him. That's when
it happened. During that. Okay.
And you can see the clip. It's going around online. It's actually really, I was going to say this right at the end, but it's very obvious that he's been bitten in a scene that you've already watched. It is actually very obvious when you know. He kind of looks down at the blood and everything, which is a nice sort of hidden tidbit, but at the same time, I'm still not overly pleased with it because I think Rick's had so much crap thrown at him that I just don't feel like we were ready for it. It feels like a ratings grabber for me. Just feels like a turn to try and get ratings. What do you think, Jamie? Is he gone? Have we lost him? Oh, for goodness sake, this Wi-Fi situation.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, man, he's just about 10 seconds behind now.
That's a long time behind. Say something else, Jamie.
I don't know what's going on. Okay. I'm talking now. Is this response quick enough?
Yes.
That was relatively quick,
So
actually.
Was it just you not listening? Is that what was going on?
Let's not dwell on it. Let's just have him answer the question.
Yeah. It keeps cutting out. What was the question?
The question is, do you think this was a ratings grabber?
No. I actually think Carl has run his purpose as a character. That sounds cold, doesn't it?
That is cold. I think that's, and I think that sort of underestimates what he could be. I would have thought he would have been the natural successor if Rick died, you know, obviously.
That's what Andrew Lincoln says about it as well. Andrew Lincoln actually said when Scott Gimble phoned him and said, you're not going to like this one, he told him what was going to happen, and Andrew Lincoln didn't say anything for a minute on the phone because he's, I think we mentioned it earlier in this series that he'd always said that Carl would be the natural successor. So, but I kind of do agree with you, Jamie. I have felt that before.
I just think that as a character, and I don't think that it's his fault, but I think as a character he's been sidelined for quite a long time to the point where I've stopped thinking about Carl. Mm. And when you know, and I no longer sort of consider Carl's role or journey. And so we had that one episode where he was with the new guy killing zombies, and I just found him a little bit redundant even at that point.
And actually, you know what? That makes a lot of sense.
Mm. Yeah, and the Negan stuff was interesting. Watching The Talking Dead afterwards, I think the King made an excellent point about Carl, which is that, if I can find my quote, I can't, but essentially he said Negan really listens to what Carl says on that wall, and the reason Negan has always responded to Carl is because Negan thinks that they're equal. But the truth is that Negan has never grown up and Carl has grown up. Carl's got over this brutal shit phase.
Well, I mean, Negan Carl nearly made Negan cry. Yeah. That was quite impressive. I did love that scene, though, where he's like, I thought we were having a good chat, you asshole. Like, he's quite a funny character at times.
That was my quote of the episode. Well, let's step through and we'll naturally get back to this. So before we knew that Carl was going to die, I wrote down, does it annoy anyone else when we have to, when we get to these big build-up episodes and they jump around in time so much? I know, Matt, that you have mentioned that you particularly like that, especially the quarry episode.
But they did too much this episode.
Yeah, it sometimes it feels to me when they do it like the pace is just being killed. I'm just kind of I don't want constant action. It's just literally going back in time at those points. Makes me think it's a con. Yeah.
I lost the thread at various points in this episode. There were times when I was like, I don't really understand what's happening right now.
Well, we had those wonderful...
Also, I feel like they've missed stuff out, which is A, kind of crucial, and B, just a bit like... I mean, are we ever going to see how the Saviors got out of the sanctuary?
Listen,
because if we don't, then it's just cheap.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I wrote down in my notes, and I underlined it twice... Why didn't they show how Negan and co. escaped?
I
think that's quite an important part of that episode, because Daryl and the team, for some reason, don't stick around after they've done this plan. They go back to the houses and just go, oh, the plan's probably worked by now.
Yeah, I'm sure back it's over. Fine. Yeah.
I love it when
it's a ridiculous thing.
I love it when we all land on the same point, because although it wasn't about that, but that was kind of one of my main criticisms of this episode. You know, after last episode, when I am certain that there were all these sort of World War moral arguments and actual direct references to kind of conflicts and stuff, in this one... We were sort of, yes, we were supposed to be having action and we were supposed to be getting on with it, but we didn't see so much. So even, for example, when the grandma of Oceanside got shot, who was the leader and was the trouble last time, she must rank as the least ceremonious death on this programme, because it didn't even happen on camera. Well, it just about did, but we were off camera and heard her say, you're going to pay for this, and we just shot her. What an odd... dispatch to not even see that.
I don't think she's dead yet.
But not only that, we also had the Negan escape wasn't seen. Negan knocks, Carl shuts the sewer. No, hang on a minute. No, there was another one. There was.
Sort your notes out.
Yeah, I've just got so many notes on this one. Okay, we'll come back to it. But on that, at that moment, you are right, Jamie or Matt, whichever one of you said it, the funniest line in the episode was, son of a bitch, Carl, was that just a ploy? I thought we were having a moment, you little asshole. That was great. But yeah, there were lots of there were lots of times in this thing when, again, it was like, you have an opportunity here. Okay, you're going to do flashbacks for us. And then cut to the good stuff. Where did the bin dippers go? Where did...
Yeah, they just ran off, didn't they?
Yeah, just things vanished. And then suddenly everyone's in the sewer. Not just the people we saw get in the sewer. Like, the whole town's in the sewer. When did that happen?
Well, that was the idea. No, I mean, I think they should, they saw that plan. We saw that plan being made.
Yeah.
We don't need to see everyone going in.
No, I suppose
not. That'd be quite a boring shot.
But even the micro of that is like Carl's Piff Paff Puff moment, which made me laugh. Yeah, when he dropped the smoke bomb and disappeared. Yeah. He was in that sewer grate without it making any noise in about 2 seconds. But, you know, fair enough. I can accept it. But
can I just ask quickly, like,
yes,
what did everyone think of the episode as a whole?
Same as the whole series. I mean, I can't wait to watch it all together again. But and yes, good, and it kind of does feel like we're setting stuff up, but this is the first time that we have ever ended a series or a mid-season knowing what will happen in the first episode back, which will be that Carl will die in the first episode back.
That won't be what happens. Yes, I think you're absolutely wrong about that.
Well, can I have that in writing and then an apology? If that happens,
if I'm wrong about that, then fine. But I don't think we'll see Carl die in that first episode.
You will.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that you will. I could get more promises out of you, but the Talking Dead made it very clear that you will. You're going to see his end, and then Chandler Riggs is going to be a guest on The Talking Dead, of the first show back of season 2, and they only bring him on as guest when they die. So that'll be it. But he will go down. Carl is going, like Sasha, Carl is going to use his death to achieve something, right?
Carl, is this stuff they said on The Talking Dead?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to know this stuff.
Well, that's obvious already, though, isn't it? Because he tried it on the wall once. He's, you know, he's still part of the plan. He's still down there in the sewer. We know the situation. He will do something heroic to do something. The question is what?
Right, okay.
Mm.
Well, Jamie, what did you think of the episode overall?
Well, I did actually enjoy a lot of it. I thought it was very tense and... You know, there are a lot of, like Howell said, and there's a lot of what we said, there's frustrations with what they're not showing. I don't think that it's the best kind of storytelling, what they're doing, but I still very much was invested and I was gripped by what was going on. I wondered, like, Rick went missing for a long time, like the bin dippers.
Yeah.
I did kind of wonder this was quite important where Rick was, and yet I thought he was in a car with Maggie, not with Maggie, and with Carol and the guy...
Carol and X-Man, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But then X-Man got taken and shot.
Yeah.
And so that confused me. There was a lot of, like, plot, a lot of bits missing. Also, if we just stop on Maggie's pregnancy for a second. Mm. Is Maggie still pregnant?
I don't know what's happening with that at all.
The hell... But how can she? Is she even... She's certainly not showing, or is she
no.
either not showing her bottom
half? I'm very unclear how much time has passed since the whole, since Glenn was killed.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that long. I think it's probably only a month, something like that.
It must be because if it was, you know, 3 months plus,
yeah, she'd have a bump.
Be nearly waddling by now. Yeah, she'd be struggling to, you know, control her gherkin cravings or whatever. And she doesn't seem, you know, to have any particular pregnancy issues at the moment. And I was thinking, has she had the baby and I've missed an episode?
Yeah,
but then there's that bit in the episode where they eventually the doctor. Is taken to her aid. But there's plot holes like that, or there's bits like that that just...
But again,
they just leapt ahead, didn't they? It was like we went from that. From that moment where they smashed the car through the wall, and then we seem to have jumped an awfully long way in a very short time.
Well, there's another example there.
The saviors are out, and they're incredibly well organised already. And I don't like to just spend time pointing out the logistics of what they would be able to achieve in a short space of time. But they talked about like how getting out of the situation with the zombies was going to take all of their ammo. And it sounded like it was going to be genuinely risky. And I thought we were going to be in this kind of guerrilla warfare situation where the saviors were going to have to be sort of bluffing their hand, like sort of, you know, assuming that everyone would still think they were as powerful as they were, but actually they're out of ammo or something like that. But it just went from the saviors are fucked to actually they're absolutely fine. And they're completely capable of taking out everyone as they were before.
As they were. As they were. And without any seeming damage at all. Yeah. And two more examples of things we didn't see that we could have done. One is Eugene has the idea of how they can escape. He drops the keys for them and stuff. That was very nice. I like that. Lovely. But we didn't then see them escape. That would have been nice. Could have spent a bit of time on that. In 90 minutes, we could have spent less time on slow montage of fucking faces again. What's the faces about?
That was the most 80s melodramatic opening to an episode. Yeah, they had like a synth guitar solo music going on in the background. It was unbelievable. No,
Sarah's commentary during the montage.
Put the Dynasty music over it. Yeah. And it would look completely out of place.
It's just great. That neo, 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 neo. Sarah's going, Carl's got a beard. Carl's got a beard coming in. And then stupid faces, that was it. And then we had, after the credits, we had Eric sitting in a car talking about Eric again. She wasn't listening.
I was about to say.
Yeah, I thought that. I thought, oh, well, you called that wrong.
Yeah, but...
There we are.
But I think...
Yeah, you said we'd never hear about Ginger Eric again, didn't we?
I know, he needs to change his tune. Or he's going to die if he doesn't stop talking about that. Bloody hell. It's almost like the writers do take it in turns. Last week wasn't written by Scott Gimble. This one was written by Scott Gimble. And it's almost like Scott Gimble is resetting something again that we don't need reset. There's like just a lot of stuff where you go, we don't need this. Let's talk about Maggie again. So I'm going, who's Neil? Who is Neil? The shot of Neil getting shot was the most confusing thing. I didn't know really who was shot. He shot his gun. As far as I can see, right, he stood on the passenger side of the car talking into the window from Maggie. He held up his gun and shot to the right, to his right, like across the windscreen shield. But Neil, apparently, is the guy sat behind Maggie in the car. I had no idea. We're going, who did he shoot? Did he shoot Jerry?
I wasn't sure. That was the Walking Dead equivalent of a redcoat in Star Trek. That was like this guy who we've never met before.
Yeah.
Who happens to be sitting in the car.
And then I realised it's the guy who looked like Johnny Vegas who was sat behind her for a bit. But and it's like
he's the chap with the neck beard, wasn't he?
Yeah, just who we meet for the first time 2 minutes before and we go, "You all right in the back, Neil? You want any Pringles? No? You all right? Great." And then she takes the coffin and Sarah made a guess at what Maggie wrote on the coffin. Neil that rode in the back. That would be on the coffin. But then we realised who the coffin was. So she's going to send one of the saviours back over and that's going to shit stir them. The King, meanwhile, is doing an A-team action moment for himself, which was impressive.
I love that to get back into King Ezekiel mode, he read some fan mail. Just to get himself back in the zone. Did you notice that?
Read some fan.
Did he?
What?
Yeah. He was reading a letter from a child to King Ezekiel.
No, it wasn't from a child. It was from Mr. Axeman.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Oh, was it?
Can I say?
Mr. Axeman. I might be wrong.
You know, of all Negan's henchmen, my favourite is the one who deals with the kingdom. I can't remember his name, of course, because I can't remember anyone's name. But, you know, when he's the guy who always like goes, I don't want to do this. I didn't want
to. And he looks really genuinely put out, having to be an arsehole. It's true. He finds it really draining.
He is what Jamie would be if he was a henchman in the apocalypse.
Like, he's standing up there, he's thinking, God, they're going to make me kill someone, aren't they? I want to get home.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was a really terrible action sequence, I thought. That whole thing with, like, the King Ezekiel blowing up all that petrol.
I thought it was all right.
Just seemed like, I thought it just seemed very wasteful.
Well, at least...
And also, everyone was so distracted. And then that really prominent shot of this woman in a headscarf kind of, you know, just, like, clearly... They were just setting up the fact that she was going to do something.
Poked him with a stick or something. Yeah.
It's just like, let's establish that this person exists.
Yeah.
So that when they do something mildly significant, it's not entirely jarring for everyone.
And like, yeah, and then there was absolutely no need for the king to remain there behind the wall. Just shut the door behind you on your way out. You know?
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. Just go with him. Do the padlock on the other side.
I know.
For fuck's sake.
Weird.
And then we had...
Then Morgan just was sort of walking up to the wall and then disappearing again. What an utterly pointless... It's just like, just remember Morgan exists.
Oh,
just
yeah, everyone.
Morgan exists.
And that's it. That's it from Morgan, I think. Because he said he was...
Let's look at some positives, though, because I think we're, you know...
We're slamming it. You're right.
Well, we are giving it a slam.
I thought the episode was started poorly and finished really strongly.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. I mean, just one more slightly laughable moment was Rick and Negan had a fight, and Negan punched him out of the window. Did you see Andrew Lincoln's hop into the mist after he'd fallen out the window?
No.
Did this really funny kind of sprightly, light-footed hop into the mist to disappear. It was like, we need a shot of you disappearing into the mist. Can you do that? And it was really nice. It was like a fairy hopping from a toadstool. If you get the chance to see it, look at it.
I thought that moment where the two of them met was really good.
Yeah.
I was about to say. Yeah.
Because
that fight scene.
Because it was genuinely like, is one of them going to fucking die right here?
Yeah.
That's good. It had that tension. All the stakes were there, and it was, they're both so powerful and dirty fighters.
He still,
it was really, it was a good fight scene.
But he still had to have that dialogue. Negan, when he hits him with the baseball bat once or twice, and in the immediate throes of this fight, he's even saying the expositional line that is, I'm not going to kill you now, I'm going to leave it till later, hang you up in front of the thing. And I'm like, every time these two meet, one of them says, really obviously, by the way, I'm not going to kill you now, I'm going to kill you later. Just kill each other, for God's sake. Or try and fail killing each other rather than telling us that you've made the decision not to.
I did love it, though, like the exchange when Rick tells him to shut up and he goes, no, I'm going to keep talking. I mean, so for me, like, one of the success stories of this series so far is Negan. I actually think for the first time I'm really enjoying Negan as a character.
Well, I mean, you said we'd come back to it later, like that moment between him and Carl on the wall. It was the first time I enjoyed him it wasn't the first time I enjoyed him as a character, but it was the first time in a while, because I've been getting very sick of his kind of constant veneer of sarcasm and machismo shtick. Mm. I've been getting kind of bored of that. It just feels too one note. And to see him kind of engage in a conversation like that and take it seriously, it just made it much more interesting to me. And to see a little bit of humanity in there and see him actually empathize with someone who's an enemy.
Mm. Yeah. And again, I think that observation by the actor who plays the king is really good. It's really interesting on that and accurate, I think, which is Negan kind of looks up to Carl, and he probably doesn't know why, but it's because Carl, who is the adolescent, is more mature than Negan. Negan thinks that he could turn him into a badass. He doesn't realise Carl was a badass and then learnt a code of morality. And this whole episode is about Carl's code of morality, and that it's kind of where he differs from his father and teaching his father lessons. You know, it was worth saving that guy, even though he got bit and all of that.
Yeah, and I think Negan, we have seen a bit more nuance in this series. I understand that, you know, I got sick of the sarcastic kind of caricature in the last series. I feel like this series we've had that kind of. I certainly understand his kind of. His ethos, his kind of idea of what society should be, and also I think you got a little bit into like behind the kind of bravado machismo that he kind of exudes in front of all his troops. I do feel like as an actor, Jeffrey Dean Morgan's had a lot more fun and a lot more to work with in this series.
Yeah, we saw tinges of it in that episode with Gabriel, didn't we? And it sort of developed a bit from there. And it's and then the conversations with Eugene as well. I really like that's their relationship. It's good.
I
finally realised what the other thing was that we didn't see, and of course it was Carl getting bit. We didn't see Carl get bit. We didn't see Oceanside Granny death. We didn't see Neil, whoever he was.
Well, you just told us we did see Carl get bit.
Oh, yeah, but without knowing it, you know, it was kind of
right, I see.
Like almost. It's a real cheat in a way. It's the old, like, you're supposed to see something in Act 1 that is paid off in Act 3. That's the whole point. And if you just say to your audience, well, it was there, you just had to press pause, it just feels like, oh. And my initial thought was...
I don't agree about that.
Well, all right, but it doesn't... It still feels to me... If you look at the ratings across the board for this series... The moment Scott Gimple took over The Walking Dead, the ratings went from like 80% approval to 40%, like overnight when he took over. And I don't think he's bad. I think he's a very smart guy and I think he's got some wonderful
stuff. When did that
happen? Which series was it, Jay? Was it 4 or 5?
I don't know, actually.
It was 4 or 5, but one of them, it literally goes off a cliff as he took over, which is...
I think he's done an incredible job since then. I think the stuff since then has been some of its strongest parts.
Well, I agree some of its strongest parts, but at the same time, when you do watch back that first series and the second series, there isn't ever a point where you would be smart enough, where you would say, let's be smart enough to not actually show somebody's murder. We just hear it. It's like just ever so slightly too pretentious to keep everybody on board. And this Carl thing is an example for me. It's such a big move.
I don't understand what you were saying just then. Were you saying that the first part of the series was like that or this part?
The first series of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, but they wouldn't do... Sorry, are you saying they wouldn't not show a killing in the first series?
They would show the killing. They would always show it.
Yeah,
so,
right, okay.
So in the first one, you know, right back to the pilot, man gets stuck in tank, picks up walkie-talkie, someone, there's some hope, you know. Whereas now it seems, yes, it's got brilliant themes and everything, but it seems like that basic stuff, that basic storytelling stuff, sometimes just becomes way too clever for its own good. The frigging montages and the hearing things instead of seeing things, the people talking about things that have happened instead of actually seeing them happen.
Well, while I agree with you about the way in which the series has gone, and certainly I think... some of that stuff, certainly this episode, they didn't hit it quite. And in the last few episodes, I think they've spent far too much time kind of reestablishing stuff. And then when it comes to the crunch, they haven't shown you all the stages. They haven't taken you through the narrative effectively. But I think that the other stuff you're saying about the way the series develops is part of the show's strength. And I go on about this idea that the best thing about this show is that it goes all the way through the idea. It follows it right through to the end. Mm-hmm. So I think that's natural. In the first couple of series, you're establishing everything, you're figuring it all out. And so by the time you get to series 8, you've got to get right into the mm-hmm. bone marrow of what the story is about, because you can't just keep having them move to another place mm-hmm. and find a new lot of zombies. It would get incredibly boring and repetitive. So they have to go internal. You have mm-hmm. to get a bit more pretentious.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably. Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I do still, you know, my initial thoughts when Carl died, my initial thoughts were, this doesn't happen in the comics. The actor must be dying for a life. You know,
that
Chandler Riggs must... but I knew that Carl didn't die because I knew that there was a big cliffhanger this week and someone was going to die. So I'd done a bit of research. But Carl doesn't die. So,
what do you mean you did a bit of research? Did you go and find out who did die?
I read a few bits and bobs, like people going, these are the options, but I've checked this since. He doesn't die in the comics.
Right.
So there were people speculating who it would be, but they were saying who it definitely wouldn't be.
No, but I'm just being really prosecutorial because you said that your first reaction was that Carl didn't die in the comics, but yeah, you didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm just catching you in a lie.
Yeah. No, I'm not lying, I promise. Otherwise, I wouldn't have written it down. You could check my facts. It definitely doesn't happen in the comics. So I thought,
no, I believe that. Yeah,
I thought that the young actor Chandler Riggs must be like having enough. He must be dying for a Hollywood life or something. But he didn't, and it kind of made me not happy. Now, notes from watching The Walking Dead afterwards were that
Talking Dead,
was that yes, it wasn't from the comic books. Scott Gimble decided it. Carl will die like Sasha doing something heroic, and this was not on that. I just read it online. Chandler Riggs's father, William Riggs, took to Facebook and said this: watching Gimble fire my son 2 weeks before his 18th birthday after telling him they wanted him for the next 3 years was disappointing. I have never trusted Gimble or AMC, but Chandler did. I know how much it hurt him, but we do absolutely know how lucky we've been to be a part of it all and appreciate all the love from fans all these years. Andrew Lincoln said, Scott Gimble called me up, said, you're going to hate this one. Da-da-da. I didn't speak for a minute. I always thought Carl was going to be the one who led the show forward, that Rick would hand over his boots and revolver when he walked off into the sunset, season 28. I predict Scott Gimple's time is limited. I think that this may have been a move that makes the studio even go, hey, not sure about this. So the reason that I worry that it is a ratings kind of grabber is, number one, the ratings are going down and down and down, so of course they're going to want to do stuff. But number two, when they've told him that they're going to sign him up for the next 3 years and then they do this, that signifies a sort of last-minute decision. That this doesn't mean to say that Jamie isn't right, Carl had run his course, and that this is, you know, going to work out, that it's still going to be great. I just think that's an interesting backdrop. Also, were the lowest ratings of a mid-season finale.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that.
These were the lowest ratings of a mid-season finale since mid-season 2. Apparently.
Really?
What
happened in mid-season 2? Because that was the one where the writer's strike was going on.
Right.
I think the point is, like, from every series was accumulating more and more viewers, wasn't it? It was getting bigger and bigger as a show. I think it started off around 2 or 3 to 4 million, and it's kind of built on that until it's been at its peak 17 million. So if it is dropping off, there'll be a lot of people panicking, and you can kind of see that in the plot sometimes. That's true.
Yeah. Those numbers always baffle me. Because I remember when I was like, I don't know how long ago it was, I must have been a teenager, but the Radio Times magazine used to publish viewing figures.
Yeah.
And like EastEnders and Coronation Street used to battle it out, getting
20 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in a country where there's only 35 million people.
There's 60 million, Matt, but carry on.
Was it? No, but you're talking about in the mid.
There was 60 million, I promise you. But it's very cute that you didn't know that.
No,
but it's still
population stats. Wrong. Sorry,
you're right. A third of the country watching essentially shite TV, and now to be celebrating 17 million of great TV. That is a fascinating thing.
It's a big deal also because it's a cable channel. This isn't a network channel. So what they've done on The Walking Dead on AMC. It's quite incredible, really. The viewing figures are amazing for a cable channel. And even, you know, for any channel these days. But, yeah, the fact that things are dropping off, I wouldn't be surprised if Gimble's head does go. I don't think it'll be related to Carl per se. I think it'll be related to the fact that it just keeps dropping off. Mm. And the fact that this finale left just didn't connect the dots well enough, you know. That's the issue with this episode. The dots weren't connected in a way that made the story enjoyable enough. When you spend the problem, I love this episode in places, but I spent so many times going, oh, hang on, oh, what
I wrote down so many questions because I didn't understand things, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it was like the scenes, the actual scenes were really strong, but they just didn't tie up.
Yeah, you go, who the fuck is Neil?
They were just thrown together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a shame, because it's almost, look, I'm pretty sure I mentioned this every episode. Jamie and I have worked together for a long time. Now, when you have a partnership in anything creative, you often get really good stuff out of it because you naturally outweigh each other's weaknesses and challenge each other's flaws, you know. And I think you can see that. I mean, look at Matt Stone and Trey Parker and lots of teams throughout the years. When they stick together, it tends to be great. And when they separate, things tend to go a bit shite. And with The Walking Dead, it does almost feel like when we were talking before, Matt, about the style of Scott Gimble. I don't want him to lose his job because I think that 75% of what he does is phenomenally good. Like, it's brilliant. I just wish that, what's his name, the actual comic book writer, the Robert Kirkman, was co-writing them with him. I wish that there was a fight going on there that wasn't just that episodes are farmed out to different teams, that there was literally a couple of them writing it. Because I think Robert Kirkman and Greg Nicotero, the special effects guy and executive producer, and Scott Gimble have all got really three really different styles and really different approaches. Sometimes I feel like probably the only way it can work over there in La La Land is that there's a fence put up that separates them in order to do their thing and stuff. It's just a bit of a shame because the cleanliness, the clarity of those first couple of series, I think has gone a little bit, not just because you have to explore wider themes. Just feel like it's got a little bit fat in the wrong places that stops people saying things like, we didn't see who Neil was. Who did you shoot? That, you know, the simple stuff seems to have disappeared a little bit out of these things.
Anyway. Yeah, to an extent, and like you can, I do think Scott Gimble has to take a bit of the blame though, because as a showrunner, it's your job, whoever you give the episodes to, and you give them to separate teams of writers, your job is to
pull the threads together
and go, okay, yeah, and that's what he's not doing a good enough job at. At least in this series so far, you're right, you're doing brilliant bits, and the scenes themselves are really compelling and really enjoyable and tense, and that there's some great scenes in this episode, and that's why I feel a little bit annoyed that I am just sitting here slagging it off, asking for them to get fired. But
I might watch the whole thing again, actually. I've got it all recorded on my TV.
I might love
to see how it ties together on a binge.
So let's look at this, right? Remove the binge.
We should do that though, actually, before, because we've got a mid-season break. We could all actually just cream it on our own.
And then we'll do a little preview before it comes back.
See how we feel. All right, let's do that. But in summary, if you removed the bin dippers, right, here's how the series would have worked for me so far. How many episodes we had? Six or eight?
Eight.
Here's how it would have worked for me. For episode one, first 20 seconds, unfortunately someone drops a nuke on the bin dippers and they're never mentioned again. A bit of shrapnel from that flies out, travels about 10 miles and takes out both Eric and his partner Eric. Unfortunately, both of those are gone. Now, then we have... Rick takes over. I mean, the invasion is planned. There is a great plan. It involves models. It involves people building the cars with corrugated iron. There's some discussion over which nails should be used. But the whole episode is the preparation for war. Episode two, it's the actual invasion itself that we rattled through in 5 minutes in episode one. The invasion happens. They get to Negan. Negan comes out, says his funny line. There's a shootout. That's the end of that. Episode three is some Eugene shit morality discussion going on inside. Episode four, the whole thing is a bottle episode. Negan and the vicar talking to each other. Episode 5, we have the king. He's trying to do something. The animal gets Carol and him, all of that, that's all sorted. Episode 6, what have I missed now?
Just so you know, I've got to get away in the next couple of hours.
Okay, okay. Episode 6 is an Indiana Jones-style chase with Daryl and Rick. They have a big fallout. Episode 7 is...
Preferably before Friday.
at the end of that episode 6, Daryl invades the bin lorry thing and the walkers go in. Episode 7, the whole episode is done very quickly in we get down into the sewers, and the whole 90 minutes is based in the sewers, and we cut to Negan up top who's looking around for them, can't figure out. It's an entire Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode, and that's where the series ends.
And then episode 8, Matt kills himself.
I even bored myself halfway through that.
Was that your idea of what should have happened?
I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
what was that?
Yeah, it was what should have happened.
Did you find that in Scott, whatever his name's been?
But, okay, well, the wider point and the shorter point is, I would have liked things like, there were certain situations like the sewer and Negan and the vicar. I would have liked to have spent longer in those worlds, and you probably could have...
Well, I'll tell you what, gotcha. Just say that next time.
No, yeah. I got carried away. I got carried away.
Jesus Christ. Right, I've got to go, guys.
We're only 40 minutes in, okay. And somehow made it feel like 90. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
See you all.
Happy Christmas, y'all. And by the way, I started the episode at a 7. I ended... at a confused 8.5.
I did my traditional, started at 8, ended at 8.
I'm with Matt, I'm afraid. It's a flaccid end for Christmas, but that's... Jamie's used to it.
No, 8 is good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. 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 Okay. We'll rewatch.
All right.
Right. More box sets to discuss in the new year. See you sort of second or third week of Jan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Email us studio@theboxsetpod.com and go and listen to The Adventures of Brian Hovis. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.